Long before Fred Astaire ever laced up his dancing shoes, Edward Muybridge changed the way we see the world. Muybridge was the first person to capture high-speed motion on film when he took a series of photos of a trotting horse. It was the first step in inventing the technology that later created the movies. And it revolutionized how people experience time and space. Cultural critic Rebecca Solnit has written a book about Muybridge called River of Shadows. She told Steve Paulson about Muybridge's great breakthrough.
In 1872, he really begins his project of photographing Leland Stanford's racehorse to answer Stanford's question, which is, what do a horse's legs do when it trots? Does it ever have all four legs off the ground at once? Which was about the extent of Stanford's intellectual interest. Muybridge realized he was onto something really big and continued to tinker with the technology. And only in 1877 does he succeed with these brilliantly engineered cameras and this secret chemical alteration to the photographic process that allows him to capture these really crisp series of images taken at regular intervals with a bank of about a dozen cameras. And then has the next breakthrough, which is that if you project them in sequence with a blackout in between each image, you basically can reconstitute that motion. You can show people something that appears to be moving.
You have a great phrase describing what Muybridge did, that he was the one who really split the second, which in many ways was as revolutionary as the scientists who later split the atom. It's just that he did this earlier, and it really had profound cultural implications. I mean, he was really the one who kind of changed the way we experienced time.
He was one of many, and we tend to think that the world was very stable until, you know, if you ask people, the 50s or the 70s or the internet or faxing or supersonic jets or something. And the 19th century really had a much more traumatic and profound experience of speed up with telegraphs, railroads, photography. And it was a sort of juggernaut that couldn't be stopped, that's increased speed in our time, but really begins then. And Muybridge, I think, with this world that's getting faster and faster, really brings this new kind of speed to it. But we don't really, the funny thing about cinema is that we don't experience it as speed. We don't say, wow, I'm going to watch 16 images per second or 24 images per second. You think, I'm going to watch Al Pacino scowl and stuff. Is that it takes that much speed to reconstitute ordinary time. So the transformation, I think, that he initiates is much more about that sense of being anywhere but here, of living in images, living in the movies, of that sense that, you know, for an hour and a half you're actually in medieval China or, you know, James Bond land or something like that.
You mentioned some of the innovations in the 19th century. In the 1870s, when Muybridge was doing his experiments, the telegraph was being developed, the telephone, the Transcontinental Railroad was built then. And the railroad really had a profound impact on the way people experienced the world. You quote a woman, I think, back in the 1830s who was riding on a train that was going 35 miles an hour, and she talked about going so fast that she felt dizzy.
Yeah, people worried about what the speed would do to human health. You know, it was a real shock. And it's really hard to remember that until the railroad, human beings never really went faster than the speed of horses or of water or of wind. And horses, you know, for any distance are going to take you, you know, a maximum of 10 miles an hour and probably more like 6. So to go from 6 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour, you know, it's as though suddenly your car could drive the speed of a 747 and you're looking out the window at 400 miles an hour. It's really overwhelming. But the railroad, the first passenger railroad ran the year Muybridge was born in 1830. The telegraph came in the mid-1840s. But when Muybridge was making his cinematic breakthroughs, the telephone and the phonograph were both invented. And so there's this second cluster in the 1870s that's really a kind of separate era of this disembodiment. And suddenly you can hear sound when you're dozens or hundreds of miles away. Suddenly you can hear people speak who aren't there, which is just so, you know, and you have to really set yourself back into the moment when that's a shocking breakthrough, when that's inconceivable. Arthur C. Clarke says that every new breakthrough is experienced first as supernatural. And there is this real sense that this is eerie and strange. And if you think about it, you know, we all think like, oh, that's so great, a Marilyn Monroe movie. And we don't really think like, wow, we're watching a woman smile and dance and walk who's been dead for 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're also talking about being able to experience things that we
yeah.
don't have physical contact with. I mean,
yeah.
they're somewhere else
yeah.
and they happened at another time.
Yeah, and that's part of the sort of what was called around the railroad and the telegraph, the annihilation of time and space, this phrase used over and over in the 19th century to describe the sense that this living in real time and real space where something 40 miles away was always going to be 6 hours or more away, where somebody who was dead was going to be really gone, not retrievable through photography or recordings, let alone cinema, where, you know, that what was there and what was here, and suddenly it all begins to blur, and it seems truly supernatural for a lot of people and really disturbing.
Did people at the time recognize how revolutionary these developments were?
Yeah, one of the things that's very fascinatingly different about the Victorians, certainly the Victorian intellectuals, is that they're very critical of what these technologies will bring. You read people like George Eliot and a number of others who really recognize that this will transform everyday life and how we think about time in our bodies, about leisure, and, you know, and I think we've had a number of similar changes in our own lives with cell phones and the internet and computers in general, all of which promise to create much more free time, and very few of us seem to have located.
Well, you came across a quote from George Eliot, which I loved, because I have it right here, in fact, in your book. And she wrote in 1860, I mean, on this whole question of how technology is always supposed to create more free time, more leisure time. And here's the quote. She says, "Ingenious philosophers tell you, perhaps, that the great work of the steam engine is to create leisure for mankind. Do not believe them. It only creates a vacuum for eager thought to rush in. Even idleness is eager now, eager for amusement, prone to excursion trains, art museums, periodical literature, and exciting novels, prone even to scientific theorizing and cursory peeps through microscopes." She saw what was happening there.
Yeah, and I think they really recognized that things were being transformed in ways that could be really problematic, or recognize what I think we need to know nowadays, that there's always a trade-off. You gain something with a technology, and often that thing is very clear, you know, convenience, efficiency, never having to leave your house again, the kind of things that technology may even celebrate all the time. But what you lose might be a kind of groundedness, a sense of embodiment, a structured kind of time where you always do this at 9 a.m. or you always meet so-and-so, or you have to, you know, and they recognize that kind of much more, that a real kind of rhythm and structure to everyday life was vanishing with these new technologies. And they, you know, I think some of them thought the trade-off wasn't worth it, and all of them were much more cognizant that it was a trade-off, whereas now we just think, like, more, faster, better.
Rebecca Solnit. Her book about Edward Muybridge is called River of Shadows. She spoke with Steve Paulson.